This is Laura Everett of SoCal Cider, located in SoCal, California, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 164. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Aria Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. This week, we're taking a walkabout at the Everett Family Farm, based in SoCal, California, and we'll be speaking with Laura Everett, who is a maker at SoCal Cider. There'll be more on that chat in just a moment, but first, a bit of news out and about in Ciderville. If you are new to this podcast, welcome. Welcome to the land of infinite possibilities, best known as Ciderville. And if you are regular listeners, it's great to have you along for the ride. Last week's episode was 163, and that was Pro Tips for Navigating CiderCon with Ambrosia Borowski. She is the general manager at the Northman, which is a Chicago cider bar. And we were just gearing up, talking about all the Chicago Cider Week events that are happening. It's kind of like after hours after CiderCon ends. And if you don't know what CiderCon is, do not get it confused with a Comic-Con. It's just kind of a play on words. It's a conference, and it's a conference for folks in the cider trade. And they are coming from everywhere, friends. They are coming from, a lot of folks are coming from the UK. We're seeing that. And of course, the special guest of honor are the makers from Canada. And that is super duper exciting. We're going to start from the west coast of Canada in British Columbia, and that is a cidery known as Sea Cider, and the maker is Kristen Needham, and she's going to be doing or taking part in a workshop called Natural Cider that's taking place on February 7th. Then moving to the east, we have Ryan Monkman of Fieldbird Cider based in Ontario, and on the 7th, he's going to be presenting a workshop called Using Oak in Cider. And I expect you could come with your questions. There's so many people working with barrels right now. I've had Ryan on this podcast a number of times. I think highly of him. And I will be introducing Ryan on the 7th for that workshop. So I hope to see you there. And then into Quebec. So these are each provinces. We have British Columbia, Saskatchewan. Oh my gosh, and I'm going to blow it. Ontario, Quebec. I'm missing one. Oh dear, I'm so sorry. I'll catch up on that. I should know it because I've driven all the way across from one coast to another. That was a while ago. Either way, moving now to the east into Quebec, and we have Michel Jodoin. He is of Cirerie Jodoin, and that is outside of Montreal, and he has been at this for a long time. He's going to be doing an ice cider presentation on the 8th. When I say he's been doing this for a while, since 1988, I believe they became the first micro distillery to be licensed in maybe 99 in Quebec. That's very exciting. And then we have a Cirerie du Minot and Alan Demoy. It appears that he's like the marketing specialist at the cidery now, but he and his sister are taking on this family-run cidery. Originally, it was kind of one of those migrations where the family came from Brittany, so that's in France, south of Normandy, another rich, very rich, vibrant cider community or region of France, and they are going to be taking part at that same workshop on ice cider with Michelle on the 8th. So that is the folks coming in from Canada. And what will always happens at CiderCon on Friday, it all ends with the grand toast. So we'll have all the Canadian makers up there. We'll be doing a toast, trying their cider. And that's also a good time if you're coming, whether you're a cider enthusiast or a commercial maker, bring a couple extra bottles to share during that grand toast. It's a wonderful time. And a one note, if you're at that cider share at the grand toast, you want to kind of keep it down and let the speakers talk before it, at least, you know, wait for it to end before you start passing bottles and clinking and whooping it up at the tables. I know how cider people are. We like to have fun, but, you know, we have a little bit of structure and civility and respect to people coming afar. So just a little tip of the glass to that notification there. It's going to be a really great time. And in terms of knowing what's going on at CiderCon, there's a bunch of episodes here. Most recently, last week's episode with Ambrosia, we did the pro tips on navigating CiderCon. That was all about Chicago Cider Week. And then going back a bit to episode 158, CiderCon 2019 with Michelle McGrath, who is the executive director of the organization that puts on this cider conference, which is the United States Association of Cider Makers. And Michelle and I were speaking about all the workshops happening during CiderCon and also the heritage track, if you will, that's part of the all the conferences now. And then backing up a bit, I recommend listening to episode 65 with Brian Rutzen, also known as Cider Brian, and he is the cider director at the Northman, which is a cider bar that Ambrosia is the GM at. And that was a delightful conversation. We were just talking all about Chicago, different restaurants, talking about making our way, taking the L train from O'Hara Airport down to the hotel setting. I think it was the Blue Line down into Chicago. You take the last stop, I believe it's Jackson. Don't take that for, you know, you got to follow this up, folks, as you're taking it out of the airport, which I'm going to do. I think it costs $2.50. That way I get to save all my other money for food and other extravagance at Chicago. And it's a nice way to just kind of roll down on the train into Chicago and get a sense of the people, the culture, the feeling, and get out and then just walk a short walk to the hotel. It's pretty easy peasy. I guess if the weather's not great, that might change it. But for the most part, it is very doable and there's places to eat along the way. So that's gearing up for CiderCon. When I come back, let's head to another little destination and some more news out and about in Ciderville. Let's take a little pause here because Mr. Quince was looking up the Canadian provinces that I was just really screwing up there. So in all due respect to the Canadians, we have 10 provinces. And from west to east, there's British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, and now we're moving really far east into Newfoundland and Labrador, New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island. Not to be confused with Prince Edward County, where Field Bird Cider is located. So, there you go. Thank you, Mr. Quince. I really appreciate your help.
My pleasure, Rio.
There's a group called the International Beverage Competition Group. And I've been talking about them for a number of weeks now, because I've been sponsoring this podcast for a number of weeks, but I don't mind talking about them. I don't have sponsors who I don't want to talk about. I like this group because it's put on by Adam Levy. He's the guy behind it. I had him on this here podcast, so I'll put a link in the show notes to that episode. It was called The Alcohol Professor because that's his moniker. And he has set up these competitions throughout the world. The one in New York City, which is going to be coming up on February 10th, and that's for cider. They're also going to be judging beer at the same time, but I'm talking to you about cider right now. And this year, they've named it the first time the New York International Cider Competition. They have this competition in New York City, Berlin, Germany, Melbourne, Australia, and Hong Kong. And the judges are all trade buyers. They're the ones who are deciding what to put on the shelf, be it a cider bar or in a store. So that makes it very unique. They are judging with the style guides from the United States Association of Cider Makers. There is still time to enter the February 10th competition. Just Google New York International Cider Competition or go to the links in the show notes for this here episode 164, SoCal Cider Organic Orchards, California. Which is exactly where we're going to head next when we come right back. I had heard of Laura Everett and her organic apple orchards based at her family farm called Everett's Family Farm in SoCal, California. But just around a month ago was the first time I had the opportunity to actually meet her in person. I was in Santa Cruz County setting up the logistics for the Totally Cider Tour to Monterey Bay. And in that meeting was Laura. She, along with other local makers, were all chit-chatting with me and each other on how best and when to set up the cider tour. Well, the cider tour is ready to kick off on April 12th and 13th, and I'll follow up with that. But at that meeting, Laura and I were able to set up a date a couple days later for me to head over to her farm and to experience the amazing orchard and landscape where she makes her ciders under the label SoCal Cider. Now, I want to just jump right in and start talking about a couple ciders in particular. But first, let's take this walkabout with Laura Everett around the farm. I know that this walkabout is really going to wet your whistle. There's no doubt about it. I mean, listening to a cider podcast, I do hope you get thirsty. Definitely. But there's something else going on here that I really also hope gets conveyed in this conversation. And that is the benefits of being able to have an opportunity where you take a tour with a maker on site at the location, and in this case, an orchard-based cidery, where you could see the trees, you could see the soil, you could smell the air, you could see where the sun sets and the sun rises, and you get a sense of all these factors that contribute to the terroir of that end product. You could taste it. You could taste it at a level that you will not get by just buying it out of the store. I know it's not possible for everyone to do this. And so that's why we have this podcast and we're able to deliver it this way. But I really want to encourage you, if you are someone who wants to delve deeper into cider, that is not just about going to the store trying to see how many ciders you could get, but going out to Ciderville and finding those locations from one region of the world to another, it changes absolutely dramatically. And sometimes going back at different seasons. That's not possible for everyone. And even for me, it was like the first time I had been in that region during December and was able to actually eat some of the fruits that we were talking about here. And it blew my mind. And I'm so happy then to be able to share this with you. So let's grab a glass and join this chat and take a walk about at the Everett Family Farm with Laura Everett of SoCal Cider, based in SoCal, California. Well, this is kind of interesting. The front section is the farm stand area, and then the actual Everett homestead is in the back. So it's two separate properties, and that's where I'm going now to go find Laura. I see dogs inside gates. I'm sure I'll be okay. That's all right.
How are you doing?
Good. I walked down from the hill because, of course, I just saw, like, trees and pulled into it.
Welcome. Yeah, I was like, I bet Rhee'll be here. I'm going to get my stuff together. So, yeah.
Cool.
Come on out. Give me a walk about. Thank you.
farm stand. We actually have that top piece, and you may have noticed there's some apple trees up there that we planted. Mm-hmm.
That's what pulled me into the drive.
Yeah.
And persimmon.
And persimmons, yeah. So.
But there's even more persimmons, Rich said.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, so you ran into him somewhere.
Yeah, he was up in that barn.
Oh, yeah.
Was this originally a persimmon?
So this is a farm from turn of the century. It was all in the same family, and they planted the Gravensteins, a lot of the Ridgel apples.
Wow.
This Pippin block was planted by them, and they planted all the persimmons. They also did Santa Rosa plums. They did cherries way back when cherries were in this valley.
I'm not sure what a Santa Rosa plum is, but what is this like little tree here?
I believe it's related to the dogwood family.
I don't
actually know because...
Oh, these red, like, fruit-like
you're
things.
You're recording me, but...
That's okay.
You never gave me all the names.
Oh, well, you know what? That is not unusual. I know, like, large tracts of orchards where people are just trying to figure out what the heck they have.
Yeah.
It's records are important.
Records are important. Yes, they are. So it's actually great because we actually know the original owner's son, who we bought the property from. And so he comes out here and I'm like, Bob, what's the name of this tree again?
I'm going to take a walk.
Yeah, please.
A stroll.
Yay.
Get my steps in for the
Yeah, right. I need a bit of that for sure.
So
2000?
So we bought the property 2002. There's actually two parcels, but yeah, basically 2000 is when we landed here.
Are you new to farming?
I grew up in the Napa Valley. So my family has a vineyard, and they've had it since 1963.
All right.
65 was the first vintage, and we've sold to the same winery for over 50 years now.
Mm.
So I grew up in agriculture.
Mm.
And my mom grew up in Santa Barbara on a lemon farm, she likes to say, and a cattle ranch. So I'm familiar with the whole thing. And,
a lemon farm. I mean, that's not something everybody can say.
Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly. So, but...
Are the lemon trees oh so pretty? And the lemon flowers so sweet?
Right there.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. So, these are pear trees, original to the property, the Comice. I have to say, they are benign neglect. We don't do much with them.
Tell me about this variety, and just so listeners can know, we came down this hill, and these are like dwarf-sized trees, in my mind, and not a classic-looking pear tree.
They've been neglected for quite some time, but actually they are on full rootstock. This is about
full rootstock.
Yeah, so they're not
so
as big as the picture that Robbie showed you. But as far as I know, they're on
Well, that's from here for sure that
yeah,
Robbie showed
exactly.
me. This is a classic California pear tree?
Yeah, this is.
Wow, so we're looking at something that's probably like 12 feet high. The main trunk comes up about 24 inches, and then it branches off from there to
canopy. It has that upward growth, typical of pears. Comice are a beautiful apple. You pick them hard. And
oh, you're saying, you call this a pear tree.
It's a pear tree, a Comice pear.
A Comice pear, but you're saying it's an apple.
No,
it's a pear. Oh, I'm sorry, I got confused.
No,
I thought you were saying it's like an apple.
No, okay. It's a pear tree.
All right, good.
Yeah, so this block is old Comice pears.
All Comice pears.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is pretty cool.
And they're wonderful fruit when we get them. They do need a pollinator, so... And after we took a lot of the Bartletts left the property, we realized that they were the pollinators.
I mean, these are beautiful. These are old trees here.
They're very old trees. They're probably 50, 60, maybe 80 years old.
Yeah, I would say older than 50 for sure. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the plan for this pear orchard here?
Not
we have
much.
About
you can
Hi, buddy. Hi, sweetheart.
As you can see, not much has happened with them. It's one of those projects, ever-ending projects on the farm. So
Yeah, of course.
They look beautiful. They look pretty. They're great to run the chickens under in the summertime.
Yeah.
Because we don't do much with them, and it's an open field that we can allow the chickens to graze under and give shade for in the hot summertime.
Zainu. Not everybody.
Who's that? What's the name?
This is Zainu.
Zainu. All right. Did I grab my phone? Yes, I did. I'm going to just take a quick photo here, Laura. Because I just love looking at trees without the leaves off.
Well, in the wintertime, it gives you such structure.
Oh, my God. It's just beautiful.
That's why I have a hard time doing summer pruning because I can't see everything.
Yeah. And this one here in particular really caught my eye because it's huge.
Look at that base.
Yeah.
Really a stunner. It's like a, that's kind of an interesting shape here. And that's what, you know, I'm just not used to seeing, I guess, California pears. Because normally we would have them go, you know, straight up with a center trunk being pretty tall. And then coming up from there, almost like a Christmas tree.
Yeah, I was going to say the central leader.
Yeah.
Most of the fruit trees, all the fruit trees on this property were open.
Was that top grafted? But I'm not seeing any grafts on it, so.
No,
I wouldn't say at all. It just kind of comes like this because of the full sun or something?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, the idea is if you're doing it for fresh fruit, I'm sure you've heard this, you want open centers. So you get more light to everything, mm-hmm. But when obviously you do for cider or perry, it doesn't really matter quite as much,
mm-hmm.
And you can do the central leader type of pruning.
It's a beautiful orchard because you have such large spacing. It's not that industrial style.
No, this is obviously orchard. Old.
You yeah, we're looking like 20 feet spacing. Apart. And so the soil I'm looking at, just this is pretty.
It's loamy bottom. This is Soquel Creek that surrounds us, the high tree line.
Yeah.
And so this is obviously all river bottom land.
Wow.
It's really amazing soil that we have. The upper part has a lot more rocks, a little drier.
Yeah.
But down here we've got beautiful soil, which obviously has lended itself to vegetable farming.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So we have lots of old trees. There's a red delicious, a little too delicious still left on it. The orchards, we can take a left here. But
okay.
So the orchards obviously used to come down here. I know this block was a lot of, we've pulled out a lot of old trees that were dying, gravestines, and then the Santa Rosa plum, which is a stone fruit that this area is known for, that they grew commercially back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. And so back here is your processing?
Yeah, this
for
is our wash stand, processing for all vegetables. Mm-hmm. This is our vegetable fields. We do 30 to 40 different type of row crops, so everything gets harvested, washed, packaged for the farm stand or the restaurants, wherever. Markets.
I see. Yeah, great. And this is organic?
Uh-huh.
All organic
certified? Certified organic since we started.
Since you started. Great.
Yeah.
Wow, that's not easy to do.
Well, you know, benign neglect, you know, it's just...
Could become organic,
no one had done anything
with
a place for a dozen years. It was actually a little easier.
Yeah.
Which was really nice. And we had the owners to say, yeah, all I did was just for the last 10 years. You go, okay.
Yeah.
There we go. All done.
Yeah.
We just finished cover cropping everything, so that's why it's all looking a little lumpy.
So I'd like to describe this, you know, just a little bit of a visual here. So we came down the hill, and we were at this, pear orchard to my left right now. And then we're looking at this field here. You have about, what is that, an acre?
Oh, this is probably about 4 acres.
4 acres right here? Boy, I'm bad in my estimate. Okay, good. So 4 acres here, all flat, and off to the side is an orchard, and then looking straight ahead is a hillside, and it's, I guess, redwoods up there?
Yeah, a lot of redwoods.
All redwoods, so, you know, you're looking at, conifers, it's just big green beings up there up on the hill, and at the bottom, is that, live oaks, or?
Those are actually, I want to say poplars. It's the water. It's the Soquel.
The Soquel Creek is going through.
So that's they're water loving, and there's sycamores in there as well.
All right. So in the West, they call it a creek. Could be a brook or a stream
or a river. Soquel.
They call it a river.
In the wintertime, it's a river.
It feels like a river.
In the summertime, it's a creek.
As long as the water's running in California.
Exactly.
We'll just call it whatever anybody wants.
Yeah. Exactly. We'll take what we can get.
So with all this really you know, loose soil here, and it looks like your dog is kind of digging something up. What are
digging
the little gophers?
nemesis.
Oh my goodness.
There's a couple old gravenstines still scattered through here. But of course, the live oaks have taken over.
Can you point out the old gravenstines to me?
That's an old gravenstine.
Okay.
That is. And if you follow the line, it basically goes to the big trees over there, which were two huge rows of gravenstines.
Wow, yeah.
A lot of them have died.
And gravenstine's a really popular apple for making cider in California.
Up in Sonoma, they have the gravenstine cider days, and bringing it back as an heirloom.
Well, that's fun.
So
have you planted all these here more recently?
Yeah, so this is the newest orchard. Well, yeah, newest orchard. This is what we call Laura's Orchard, a vineyard designated, orchard designated cider. And this is what I started with. We obviously had the Pippins and the Gravensteins, but knowing I wanted to make hard cider, I said, I need cider apples. So I planted this block for that purpose. And so there's a mixture. Every two rows is a different apple. So in here, we've got the new ones are Foxwell, Dabonnais, and Porter's Perfection. Actually, I've doubled up on the Porter's Perfection because they're just so perfect. and I love them because I do have some more. And then as we work down, we've got Yarlington Mills, Roxbury Russets, Saman Winesaps, Belle de Bosque Goop. And then for my husband, some Fuji's.
So how far down? This is Laura's.
This is all Laura's orchard.
So all this, all the way down.
Until you hit, there's stone fruits and figs at the end.
Okay.
Obviously.
Wow. Wow.
But actually, ooh. I do a plum cider as well with the plums off the trees.
Yeah, it's kind of hard not to do that in California when you have so much choices of incredible fruits coming in.
So it's kind of fun to see what the different trees, you can really tell the differences between them.
So
leader is, as you were saying, for the, I read up and said, oh, I don't need to do open centers because I'm making cider, so I'll just do central leader.
Mm-hmm.
So another distinction between the orchards around here.
What kind of rootstock did you
use? M111.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
so they're all semi-dwarfs.
And was this planted straight away when you were here in 2000?
Planted it in 2007. Yeah. Took us a while to figure out. We sold to Martinelli's all our apples because that's the history of the farm, the ranch.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd always sold to Martinelli's, so we did that too.
Mm-hmm.
And then we decided we could do juice on our own. And then I said, well, coming from the vineyard background, I said, let's ferment it. Because you can hold it longer that way. easier to store.
Yeah.
So, so that's... And also, 2007 was about the time when I realized all my kids would be going off to colleges and I'd be by myself. And what do I do? I needed a
start
project.
A huge project. Like,
let's just start a cider business while we're at it.
Why not? At a time, but perfect timing.
I love the timing. Yeah, who knew? I had no idea. I just was making something I wanted to drink because I love cider. And I've loved it since I was a kid. I hate to say it, when I went to England with my parents at 13. So they'd always give me a glass of cider while they had their evening beverage. And so that's what turned me on. And then, of course, you couldn't get what I considered good cider here. Everything was too sweet for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, how do I make a cider like they do back in England? And that's what sort of the
wow.
So how it started.
Coming from a vineyard, you had a lot of skills already, or
I had
baseline
farming skills. I'm not sure I had the
fermenting.
The fermenting was all new for me. It's been a big learning curve. So,
are you self-taught?
Yes. Well, I did take Michael's class up in Washington State back in 2011.
Michael, who would that be?
Michael.
Was that through the Cider Institute?
Yeah, the University of Washington.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
He's from England. I'm blanking.
Michael, I know Peter Mitchell.
Peter Mitchell. I'm sorry. It was the M that was sticking in my head.
Okay. Yeah.
Peter Mitchell. Yeah. So then we've got plum trees, pluot trees, every other row, a few apricot trees, because I felt guilty pulling out all the old Santa Rosa plums, so we had to put some more stone fruits in. And also it provides for the farm stand.
You know what's really awesome about this orchard? It's all level. So...
Yes.
Being able to work on it is really nice. In the area that you could, I'm seeing apple trees everywhere, but they're all on hills.
Yeah, no, this is a treat. I mean, up top, it gets a little more dicey with the new orchard up there.
Was it hard to find this property? I mean, there's a lot of orchards here because of Martinelli's and the history here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There are farther south. We weren't looking specifically for an orchard.
Mm-hmm.
We can cook here. I take that back. My husband was looking for some orchard land because he wanted to be a hobby farmer. And so he was looking in the Watsonville, actually where we were, Coralitas area, because he worked down there.
Mm-hmm.
But this property, we used to live about 3 miles up the road.
up a canyon, and the sign went out one day, and he drove by on his way home from work, pulled in, and 5 days later.
Boom. Yeah, well, that's, you have to kind of be on it around here.
Yeah,
no doubt. So, I'm sure it gets swallowed up.
That was back in 2000 before it got too crazy. But yeah, so, you know, he always, his dad had always loved trees, but they were city boys. So he sort of had this dream, and then I said, well, okay, let's do it.
Wow. How perfect is that?
So I think we fell into it more than anything else. And I love the idea of raising my kids on some property like I was raised.
Yeah.
Farming, knowing where your food comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to have animals.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of animals do you have here?
We passed the goats. My daughter had dairy goats, Oberhausleys. And then we've run chickens, usually flocks of 300. And cats, dogs.
Mm-hmm.
The usual. We haven't done for horses or anything like that.
The goats. I mean, so here we are in this wide open field between two orchards.
Mm-hmm.
So this orchard here, what do we have? What
That's
kind of
Rich's
trees?
Orchard.
Okay, all right.
We have dueling philosophies on how to farm.
Oh, wow. So, like a his and hers
yes,
bathroom.
Yes, exactly what's going on.
There's reasons for that, isn't there?
It saves a marriage.
Right.
So he planted this, 2004 or 5? Yeah, early when we first got the property.
Okay.
And his are Honeycrisp, because Bill Denovan, who's a big apple guy in the valley and up in this area, when we first bought the property, we chatted with him, and he said, "I have never seen an orchard with so many deer, so many gophers, so much moth, so many issues. You need to rip it all out." So actually, the top part of that acreage over there, we did rip out. Unfortunately, we're kind of kicking ourselves at this point. But
what were those trees then?
They were pippins. They were primarily pippin.
Oh, ow.
And
you just things you don't know.
You
when
don't
you
know.
Came into it,
yeah,
there wasn't
know.
A lot of information for people to say, okay, what am I doing? Now coming into it, there's a bunch of information.
Yeah.
But at that, you were at that critical moment, unless you're really hunting it down.
Yeah, it was, you know, 2002, and we were trying to get advice from the apple, and he said, no, you need, he goes, plant Honeycrisp, and it was the new hot apple before it actually, he goes, it's Moneycrisp, you can make money on it, because you're not going to make money on the pippins.
Mm.
So it's a mixture of Honeycrisp, Bagalas for pollinators, and then, of course, in usual Everett family farm experiments, we have a few cherry trees thrown in on the side and some pomegranates, which we were told would not grow here, but actually do just fine.
So now we're walking by past this bed of lettuce and kale, perhaps.
Yeah, I got lettuce, kale, broccoli, cabbage, sort of winter crops, carrots, beets.
Our garlic and our strawberries we put in so that they'll be ready come April.
So right here we have this beautiful windmill.
Yes.
Classic old style, like Western windmill with a little fan sticking out and it's spinning around. And
but this will only pump 75 feet down, and we have a lot of iron in our water.
So
it would pretty much ruin anything to actually use it to irrigate the field. So it's kind of a glorified fountain. It just pumps.
I really like it. I love it.
I love it, too. And it tells me what the wind's doing and that kind of stuff. Ah.
So this is a beautiful field here, right next to the orchard, next to the windmill, right at the base of this beautiful hill here and the Soquel Creek. This is a spot that we're looking for the cider dinner for. Totally Cider Tour to Monterey Bay and all the makers here. And I can confirm indeed that that is the location overlooking the orchard and the farm, an outdoor setting where we're going to have the cider dinner on the Totally Cider Tour to Monterey Bay. If you go to ciderchat.com and go to the Totally Cider page, you'll see a drop-down menu for Monterey Bay, and you could get all the details and make your reservations today. The early bird special ends on February 12th. Now let's head back with Laura as we are looking upon this really cool old farm truck that is in view of the field and the site for the cider dinner coming up on April 13th.
My husband and his buddy Joe got it running. It was up at the old barn. And they're like, let's go into town and go get some gym sticks and a beer. So they're going into town. And so they're like going down. So they're like, wait, did we test the brakes?
Oh, God.
No, the brakes don't work.
Oh,
so they're
no.
like downshifting all the way into town.
basically do a big turnaround and came right back to the farm, parked it there, and it's never moved since.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But we use it as a stage for, you know, if we do events here and someone needs to get up high and chat.
Yeah, yeah.
Or a little band or something like that.
Yeah,
we've done that before. So.
So here we are coming to this persimmon orchard, and you make a persimmon cider. Let's talk about that.
Well, I like to use the fruit that I have.
Of course.
So decided to experiment with mushing up some persimmons and fermenting them with the apples, and turned out okay. So sort of upped it a little bit, and still finiting the recipe, making sure to see if I can get it consistent.
What kind of flavor profile would you get with a persimmon?
It's a very light flavor. It's not that, oh God, this is a persimmon.
Yeah.
Persimmons are very, very sweet.
Yeah.
The hachias. I like to use the hachias. And it's just a very light, the color comes out just, it's very light colored straw kind of, and just subtle undertones. If I think a lot of people, if they're not familiar with persimmons, would never even know.
That there's persimmons. That's really cool.
So, and actually, since you're a tree person, we'll go this way.
Yeah.
These are Fuyu persimmons, which are the short, squat ones. They're the ones that you eat hard or slice, put them in your salad. And then those ones are the hachia.
Hachia.
And they're the oblong ones, and you wait for them to be really, really soft to eat. And they're really, really sweet.
Mm. So when you pick them, here we're kind of past the season for apples. So how are you managing that with the fermenting?
That's always been a hard one. We had, the first year we did it, we had a batch that was about halfway done, and we threw the persimmons in. Last year, I got a little overwhelmed. So I freeze the persimmons, and I basically ended up making a persimmon wine and then blending it back with the cider. Because I kind of got stuck.
You do what you got
to
do.
You kind of have to do what you got to do at the time.
Look, this is like just a cacophony of orange here.
I know.
It's, to experience it, it's kind of otherworldly. Yeah. And it also, orange is actually one of, like, a favorite color of mine, because
I love orange.
You know, it's just, I like orange foods. They're, you know, typically alkaline.
Yeah.
I don't know if persimmons are.
These are high in potassium and vitamin C.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I mean, look at that. That's just beautiful. You know, you're
I'm looking for a ripe one for you.
Okay.
Can't find a ripe one down there.
How do you tell if a persimmon is ripe? The color. So the darker orange they are.
This one's getting one half of it.
Now this is a pretty big orchard to be managing. So, oh wow, that's like almost like a red.
You need it like that soft is ripe.
Okay.
So this side's not going to be tasting good.
Right.
That side.
I'm
going
to bite into it here and now and see what happens. Okay, so
it's a textural thing.
She showed me very, very, very soft. It's almost like if I had a tomato and I was thinking, oh,
jelly.
That's ready to like throw away. But for a persimmon, you want like a jelly-like experience. So I'm going to just bite right into that. Which one do you think?
Go for this one.
Okay. This is a little less jelly-like.
No, that's lower.
Even more jelly-like. Okay, here we go.
I don't know how about.
It's like a... Beyond a plum.
It's a sugar bomb.
It's a sugar bomb, but if you just, it gives you like a certain kind of vitality. Like you feel like you're, you know, dosing up on really good vitamins. No seeds. So remember that a persimmon is not a pomegranate. Pomegranate has a ton of seeds. Persimmon is just giant orange yumminess. I don't know what. The inside is super mushy, but excuse me.
They're slurpable.
They are. Just scarf that sucker down. I could see just having a big bowl of those in the morning.
Same.
And the dog likes to eat it too.
Oh, they pick their own.
Oh my God. Wow. I know we've all had moments like that when you have tasted a fruit for the first time in your life like never before. I know I've had persimmons, but not freshly pulled from the tree and just perfectly ripened. And at that moment, I fell in love with persimmons like never before. In fact, thank you very much, Laura, because now I need to be back in Santa Cruz County to have more persimmons because of you and that incredible orchard of persimmons. I mean, the apple trees were not fruiting or blossom. They were kind of in that little bit of hibernation state. But these persimmon trees that were giant were just laden with orange bobs of this beautiful fruit. And it wasn't until I returned back to my spot of Ciderville only last week and cracked open a bottle of the apple persimmon cider that I fully got the taste what Laura was talking about. Now, she was kind of like, you know, undertoning it in terms of the profile. But I want to say, when I popped that open, the rooms all smelled it. It, like, the aroma popped out of the bottle and people went, ooh, what's that? And the taste was very light and subtle. But having walked on the land and tasted the persimmon, smelled the earth, touched the soil, everything I'm talking about when you are there on site, it changed my entire scope and experience of that cider. And now, thanks to that moment, I have such a craving for that apple persimmon cider that I really quite don't know what to do with myself. There are ciders that, you know, I kind of go through and some that I don't finish. And then I'm always looking for that moment when I crack one open and it makes me savor it and savor it and want to bring it home to savor it even more. And liken it much to going to see a musician in concert live. I might have listened to that music on the record or the radio, but to actually sit in the presence of the musician allows one to just fall in head over heels and get into the jive. And that's what happens when you go out to experience a cider and don't just rely on what you could find on the shelf, but to seek it out and to go into those regions all around the world and to taste it, taste the apple, taste not just the apple, but the surrounding fruit, especially in this case. Man, did it inform me. There's nothing like Ciderville, absolutely nothing like it, and it is changing my entire mindset on cider because of this and many more experiences just like this. We're going to return now to this conversation with Laura Everett as I'm asking and chatting with her a little bit more about the ciders at SoCal Cider.
Talked about the persimmon cider, but you have like your classic
the one
flagship.
I have a flagship original. I'm still a little hard in trying to figure out how to label that one, but it was the original thought process, our original sort of recipe, a lot of pippin in it. And we would mix in some of the more tannic apples from Rose Orchard.
Mm-hmm.
Second year into production, we, more by fortuitous accident, all the apples from my orchard ended up in one tank, or a vast majority of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to ferment it all together.
Mm-hmm.
And we liked it so much that we decided to do orchard designated label. So we have the SoCal Cider, just what we started with, and then we did SoCal Cider Laura's Orchard. And it's all apples just from the property, just from that orchard. Dabbled with the persimmon cider, limited. I try to release it in the fall because it's persimmon season. And then I've also done a limited selection of the plum cider. Last year I didn't do it this year because we had no plums. So, and that's just a fun one because I freeze the plums in August when they're all ripening up. And then when the first apples come in, I can throw them all together. So, oh, there you are, Gus.
Oh, that's the other really big dog. So you're also doing a barrel-aged cider, too.
Oh, yes, and I do a barrel-aged. I'm sorry. I forgot all about that one. And that's just basically our original SoCal cider. Threw it in rye whiskey barrels and let it age anywhere from 6 months to a year.
And so all your ciders, like the ABV, would be around...
Hey, buddy.
The lowest is... The lowest is like 7.9, and they're mostly in the 8s. Just anyway. But they usually come in around 8.5 or so.
And 22-ounce bottles?
No, I prefer the 500 milliliter.
Okay.
Big tip of the glass to Laura Everett for taking that walkabout with us today around the organic orchards at the Everett Family Farm. You too can see it on April 13th on the Totally Cider Tour to Monterey Bay. Just go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com and get the drop-down menu to Monterey Bay, and you'll get all the details, and the reservations are online now. Remember, early bird reservations end on February 12th. I want to encourage you to take a look at the photos of my walk with Laura on this year chat by going to ciderchat.com and looking for episode 164, SoCal Ciders, Organic Orchards, California. And the good folks who are patrons of this here podcast via the Cider Chat Patreon page are getting an extra bonus audio clip where Laura and I were talking about the special barn she had built just for the cidery and how she set it up. I think you'll find it very informative for anyone who is a new startup or is trying to revamp their system. You could just go to the Cider Chat Patreon page, that's spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, and join today and continue to get these extra bonuses for helping to support this here podcast to keep cider going up around the world. And if you are in the cider industry or a commercial maker, you could join the Cider Going Up campaign at the Cider Chat Patreon page too. And join the likes of, well, Ross-on-Wye Cider and Perry Company based in the UK in Ross-on-Wye. You know, I really love following their Twitter feed, Ross Cider, and their Instagram feed too. Super positive people. And you know that always reflects in the cider. You can't do one without the other. It is just all about that, and really outstanding people, and having tasted their cider, I know that's true. There's also John Edwards, who did a presentation last year called Chemical Fingerprints of Cider. That was episode 133, and he leads Process NMR Associates, LLC. They do analysis of cider. I hope that we see John at CiderCon 2019 coming up. Along with Kat Fleming of Ironbark Ciderworks. That is based to the east of LA in Claremont, California, just kind of at the base of Mount Baldy. You can see Mount Baldy from all over that region. It's a magnificent mountain between Palm Springs and LA. Wonderful people there. Kat was on the podcast too, episode 142, Ironbark Ciderworks. And then also Ramborn Cider Company, based in Luxembourg, the only cidery in Luxembourg, and I had a delightful cider dinner last year with the founder, Carlo Hein. Luxembourg's Ramborn Cider Company, by the way, is going to be at the Chicago Cider Summit, so they're probably going to also be at CiderCon. I'm certainly hoping to see somebody there, so make sure if you're going to the Chicago Cider Summit, you hunt down Ramborn Cider Company. I'm not sure what they're going to have necessarily, but they do it in a very special way. They're preserving orchards there. They have very old Perry pear trees. They do have outstanding Perry. Highly recommend that. So take a look out for that. Again, check out that cider dinner with Carlo Hein. That was episode 129. And then one more person I want to make mention of, and they're new members of the Cider Going Up campaign, and that's Insider Japan, Japan's first and only bilingual magazine dedicated to all things cider. I had Lee Reeve, who spearheaded Insider Japan, on the podcast a while ago, but I'm going to be sitting down with him again, and we're going to be doing another recording and catching up on what's going on in Japan, because you probably heard it here first, but they are going to be the special guests at the Oakland CiderCon coming up in 2020. Very exciting news there. So look for Lee, wonderful guy. I know a lot of people are really looking forward to meeting him. This is going to be his first CiderCon, and maybe it's yours too. So if I see you there, Don't be shy. Make sure you say hi. We'll take a photo and share that news. I'll probably be walking around with a recorder. I might be doing a little bit of a cider chat live while I'm out and about, if I could keep up with all that. And so maybe this will be a good opportunity for you to be able to say hi to Ciderville and to raise a glass. I so look forward to that. It is 0 degrees outside with that crunchy, fine, dry snow. And yet, I'm feeling fine spending this time with you. Thanks for being there, Ciderville. It means a lot to help keep cider going up. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Yeehaw!